Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and doing the program this week from Orlando, Florida, because of the 2014 PGA Merchandising Show. I've been down checking out some of the latest things today, and I'm going to do a little bit again tomorrow before I head back home up to Panama City Beach. But that's where we're doing live this evening, the Golf Talk Live program from Orlando, Florida. And I got a great guest this evening. I've been walking around, as I said, around the PGA Show, and my guest and I are going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later in the program. But let me bring him out here first. My guest this evening is PGA apprentice Michael Wheeler, and he's lives up in the Reading, Pennsylvania area, and he's just sort of starting out his PGA career, and we want to talk to a little bit about that, how he got started, and so forth. And so I'm going to bring him out here. Welcome to Golf Talk Live, Michael.
Hey, Ted. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me on.
Not a problem. I'm glad we finally got you on the show here. I know you've been busy the last few months getting ready to get your PGA credentials, and I know you've been down walking around the show as well. We'll talk a little bit about that, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity to come on the show, and actually it's kind of a unique situation because most of the professionals that I've had here on the past have been in the business for quite some time, and you know, 20 or 30 years, many of them, and you're still fairly new to the program, and so I wanted to kind of get a different perspective to the teaching profession. So I wanted to have you on the program, and I know that you've been playing for some time, and obviously you're an accomplished golfer in your own right, but you're sort of getting your feet wet compared to some of the others out there, and so I wanted to get sort of that fresh perspective, and a young guy like yourself maybe can teach some of those out there that want to get into the game and want to be able to get some good instruction, and maybe some of those that want to get in and learn how to teach as well, what they have to do that. So let's start right out of the gate, Michael. How did you get started in the golf business?
Oh, man. Well, I've been involved in golf for as long as I can remember. I grew up playing soccer and baseball, but my dad got me into the game. And, this is my fourth year back in the golf business. Had a little hiatus there in the middle of a couple years being a state trooper in Maryland. But, I've really been in the golf business really almost since I was 14 years old, caddying at a golf course in Maryland called Bully Rock. I started caddying in there, and just mainly I just wanted some free golf, free golf and cash. That's why a lot of caddies do what they do, right? So,
right.
So I got involved doing that, had a good time, and got pretty good. I won a junior tournament, national junior tournament, a bunch of local junior events, and played college golf, played professionally. I was a member of the Hooters Tour at one point, and played the Moonlight Tour, all the Central Florida stuff. And, that was my first love, working with Ted Sheftick on my golf swing and just playing golf. That's what I wanted to do. But, after moving back home, I really wanted to get into teaching. And, but before you can really be a good teacher, you really need to be a good golf professional. You need to have all those basics, what we'll talk a little bit about tonight as far, and that's what the apprenticeship teaches you. But, I really don't recommend a new instructor or new teacher and professional to go right to the teaching side. Learn how to run a golf course. Learn how to turn carts and run the outside operations and run a golf shop. You got to know how to do all that stuff.
And that's an interesting point that you bring up, Michael, because really it's like that in any aspect of life. I think, a lot of times, especially a lot of the young guys and gals coming up now in the world, they're sort of led into this direction that they need to sort of start at the top. And really, you need to kind of get your feet wet. Obviously, being a PGA professional is a very high honor, and a lot of people, not everybody's cut out to do that, and you have to have certain skills and talents to be able to pull that off. But you also have to understand other aspects of the game, and I think sometimes starting out sort of on the ground floor, like you said, working in a pro shop and doing some of these different things that you might do at a golf course, just sort of familiarize yourself with the game really before you get into the apprentice program. And that's a very smart thing because, as I said, a lot of other areas in business and that, too many times that, you know, the youngsters want to get out there and they want to, you know, get into business, but they don't really sort of start out. It's kind of like the old thing, you know, when you'd come out of college or something, you know, everybody used to go and you'd work at a fast food restaurant, get a little bit of experience and work your way up. And it seems nowadays a lot of people don't want to do that. So that's some great advice for those out there wanting to get into the PGA Apprentice program. We'll talk, again, like you said, a little bit more about that, but that's a great point to raise right from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and believe me, it wasn't my idea. I was told this from guys that have been in the business for 30, 40 years. You know, I mean, my mentors.
Right.
You know, they were like, you know, I know you want to teach, but you gotta start at the bottom, work your way up. You gotta earn it. You know, it's not something that should be given to you. It's something that should be earned. And you need to understand,
exactly,
you know, the golf swing. You know, you gotta understand all aspects of it. And that takes time to learn. So while if you know you want to teach, start taking time and, you know, do what I did. Go find the best instructors in your area and watch them teach, read books, watch movies, do everything you can. You know, I mean, I stay up late at night just watching the Golf Channel and studying different golf swings and reading different books. I love it, but my wife hates it, you know? So,
yep.
It's part of, you know, it's the nature of the beast. So
I'm sure that resonates with a lot of spouses out there, not just the ladies, but I'm sure some of the female instructors out there, I'm sure their husbands that aren't in the business probably feel the same way. But, you know, you raise another valid point too, Michael, in this area. It's not just, you know, getting your feet wet a little bit first before you jump into it, become a teacher is important for a couple of reasons. It helps to build character, but it also really, you know, it's not a cheap process. There's, you know, costs involved going through the apprentice program. And it's a good way to, you know, get your feet wet and to see whether or not you're even going to like the golf business, because, it's, you know, everybody sort of is under this impression that, you know, as a PGA professional that you're just out there giving lessons all the time. But there's a lot of other areas of that that you have to understand the business end of it as well. And I think that, you know, it's good to sort of get into a little bit of the business end of it first, before you decide to take that next step, because you may get in there, may not like it as much as you thought. And you know, as I said, if you go out and sort of go through the apprenticeship program and then maybe find out after, you know, maybe you're not cut out for it or you just don't have what it takes, you can save yourself a lot of expense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody will have that that moment of, you know, do I want to do this? I mean, any pro that's been in the business for,
yeah,
you know, X amount of years has had that job that they couldn't wait to get out of. But it's just, you know, it's part of the golf, you know, the golf profession hazing process. You know, you just gotta put up with it. It's just part of it. You know, I mean, you know,
yeah,
it makes you a better professional.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, the hazing process, and that's pretty much it in the profession. But, Michael, just before we continue on, let me just let the listeners that are tuning in here live tonight just to remind them that we are live from 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Of course, being down here in Orlando, we're on Eastern Standard Time, so it's actually 7 p.m. Eastern Time. But we'll be on until 8 p.m. Central Standard Time or 9 Eastern. And if you want to call into the program, if you're interested maybe you've got some questions for Michael or myself, or you want to know a little bit about the apprenticeship program, you can certainly call in, and we'd certainly love to take your call. And that number is area code 646-716-4667. And you can also email me if you want during the program at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. That's ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. Certainly be more than happy to read out your emails here live on the air. And don't forget, if you're on Facebook, you can visit the Facebook page at Golf Talk Live blog. That's facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. Certainly would love it if you'd go and like the page. And also, if you're while you're surfing on the web there, if you want to check out the website or blog, it's www.golftalkliveblog.com. And we've got some great books from some previous guests that were on here that written some great golf books, some instructional and some just some great stories. So if you want to check that out, you can. And actually, the links are there that you can click on and buy it directly from Amazon or right from their own websites. And also, there's a couple of products, two, three products on there as well that of guests that have been on the program. So make sure you visit the website as well and check those out. They make some great gifts, or you might want to just pick a copy of some of the books or what have you for yourself. So make sure you visit that at golftalkliveblog.com. And also, as I always have said these last few weeks, I don't do a lot of tweets on Twitter, but I do keep updates on the program. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is Ted and Buck CEO. That's Ted and Buck CEO being in capital letters. I certainly appreciate all those of you that have been following these last few weeks. I appreciate you, so keep it up. And obviously, if you want to tune in live here, the link is blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive. Michael, let's talk a little bit about the apprentice program. Tell us a little bit about the journey that you had to take and what, obviously, you did some other things before you did it, but once you decided to make that commitment, what was sort of the first steps that you needed to take?
First steps is just to go on PGA.com and find out where your local, what's called a PAT, player ability test, from playing ability test, I should say. And, you just play golf, there's a certain score you have to shoot. Normally, it's always 36 holes. Normally, it's an average of about 77,
right.
So like 154, 156, somewhere around there, depending on the difficulty of the golf course. And you sign up for
right.
that, that's usually like right around $150 after all is said and done. And, you sign up for that and take, if you pass your PAT, you're good. But, you can also shoot what's called a qualifying score. If you shoot under like 83, which hopefully everybody wants to be a golf pro can shoot under an 83. But,
sure.
So from the white tees with pins in the middle, I should say. Not, it's not like they tip
right.
it out or anything like that. It's going to
right.
make it about as easy as it can possibly be.
Right.
If you shoot a qualifying score, you can go ahead and register, and they call level zero or the qualifying level where you have to learn the constitution and the rules of golf. And you just take a couple tests
right.
and those. Don't test me on that because I don't remember. It was like 3 years ago. So, but you still learn the basics of it. You learn the basic structure of the PGA, which is you're always going to remember that. Just because it's important, the structure of how the sections work with the, their own chapters, and then, how they tie into national and different committees you can serve on. Like I was lucky enough recently to be selected to the instruction and instruction committee and the education committee. Once you become a PGA professional, which I'm going to be elected in like 2 weeks, you're able to serve on a committee and help. Help your section out. So that's kind of some of the stuff to learn in the initial qualifying level.
Right.
Then you just go through several, there's three levels after that, level one, two, and three, obviously, not rocket science there. And,
mm-hmm.
Basically you're just, each one piggybacks off the other. Each
right.
one gets consecutively harder. Don't let people lie to you. They don't get easier. They get harder because I kind
yep.
of thought they would get easier. They don't.
Well, and as they should.
It's a learning process.
Sure. Now, if you were to, let's just say that we've got some listeners out there that maybe are thinking of getting in the profession, and let's say they've been working at a local course for maybe the last couple of years, and they've obviously played golf, and they've got a pretty good game. If you were to sort of give some a pearl of wisdom, if it were, for somebody that wanting to get into the profession like you have, What would you suggest to them? What advice would you offer for somebody that's interested in getting in to become a PGA professional?
Best advice really would be just to buckle up and hold on, man. It's a lot of information that you learn, and the first realization that you have to come to is the fact that if you like playing golf, you probably shouldn't be in this business because you never play. We're always working. We're always facilitating for those people that like to play golf. We don't play. Luckily, in the teaching side of things, you have a lot more opportunity to play. And there's section tournaments within each PGA section. I'm lucky enough to be in Philly PGA, which is an outstanding section. In my opinion, I think Philly section and Met section are probably the two top sections in the country for playing and teaching. Some of the best teaching professionals and some of the best players come out of that section. A good example is a friend of mine and my coach's son, Mark Sheftick. Mark is
right.
a hell of a teacher and a hell of a player. He is amazing, and he's played three PGA championships, three or four, been on three or four PGA Cup teams. He's played in, I feel like, every single national PGA, national professional championship since it's been around. But he's just a great player. And a lot of these guys that are out there that are playing could be playing on tour. They just, they enjoy the teaching side of things. They enjoy interacting with people.
Right, and I think it's, you know, the one thing you have to keep in, and a lot of people, you know, there's really sort of two ways to look at this. To give you an example, you're going to get some individuals out there that are extremely good teachers, but maybe not the best players. That doesn't mean they're not, you know, competent and a good solid player, but they may not have the skills quite to get out on tour. Then you've got some that have a little of both. But yep. Not every good player, and I'll give you a good example, not every good player on the PGA Tour necessarily would make a good teacher.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, it really does take a special kind of personality to be able to teach. I mean, you know, a lot of people that we teach come to us on a weekly basis, and, you know, they're trying to improve our game. And, you know, it's a great, awesome process. I love every minute of teaching. You know, but then, you know, every once in a while you get a student that comes in, you ask if they practice, and they haven't, and you work on the same thing over and over again, you know, and that's where, you know, the patience kind of comes in, just with anything, any job that you do.
Right.
You know, but, you know, if you want to teach, you really got to love interacting with people because you're going to be around them all day, every day. You got to love teaching.
Well,
the
it's definitely,
golf, you know.
Right, and it's definitely not a profession for somebody that's, you know, shy or timid. By any means, because you have to be,
right.
I mean, you certainly don't have to be over-the-top aggressive, but you've got to be assertive individual. I mean, you've got to, you know, be creative to drum up business. And also, too, is, you know, when I was walking around the show, and we'll talk a little bit, you know, about the PGA Show in a few minutes from now. But, you know, one of the things that a lot of people had mentioned, you know, getting on about practicing and things like that is, you know, you certainly have to have a lot of patience. And you also have to, you know, you have to be willing to accept the fact that, you know, not every student that you're going to teach is just going to come in and pick up everything right away. So you may have to be a little bit repetitive. And you've got to be willing to, you know, to be able to say to them, you know, if you want to improve in these areas, here are things. And you may have to keep reinforcing that because a lot of times people will just come out, they'll take a lesson, and they'll go home and sit for 2 or 3 weeks, and the next lesson that they come into, they really haven't done anything. And,
yep.
You know, it might be their job, you know, it might be their social activities that just keep them so busy, and you've got to deal with that. And that's not an easy thing. Like you said, it takes patience, but it also, you have to be the type of person that can do things to help motivate them to want to go out and practice. So what are some things that you sort of have formulated in your head that you want to do to make sure that you keep your students motivated?
You know, I always, whenever I'm teaching, I'm very, very passionate about teaching, and I always just try to have fun in our lessons. Now, when we're down teaching, you know, and we're working on stuff, yeah, it's down to business, we're going to be serious, but we're going to have some fun with it too, and we're going to hit different shots, I try and give my students after every lesson, I just call it homework because it's easy to think of that way, and I try and get them to practice 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night. I look at it, you know, if you do everything, or if you do something every day, like you brush your teeth, eventually it becomes a habit. And if it becomes a habit,
right.
It becomes easier to do subconsciously. And ultimately, that's how you're going to shoot better scores. You don't want to be on a golf course and thinking about, well, where am I supposed to put my hands on the grip? I know my golf is, what the heck? I don't remember what to do. Well, if you practice it, and even if you
right.
just put a club by your couch and you're watching TV every 5 minutes, just pull the club up, put your hands on the grip properly, put it down. Put your hands on the grip properly. Put it down. Do it without looking, all by feel. And, you know, so that way when you go to the golf course, there's no question of if your hands are on the club properly. You know, then it's just thinking about target and how the ball's going to get there. You know, it's simplifying.
Yeah.
It's as hard as it is. You know, we don't need to make it any harder.
You can always tell, you know, it makes me think back when I was a little bit younger and growing up and just like you said, you know, practicing in the house, and I've always, you know, had my clubs handy, and a sure way to tell whether you've got a golfer in the family is look at the floorboards in a house, and if you see nicks and scrapes, you know that they've either been putting up against the wall, you know, sometimes you'll see nicks up on the ceiling if they got a low ceiling and they've been taking a backswing or two. You might see a few of those, but you know, that's so true. You want to be able to work on those things, and sometimes, especially, you know, living up in the Northeast or, you know, where I'm originally from up in Canada as well, certain times of the year, it's just not feasible to get out there and work on your game. I mean, obviously, a lot of the instructors up north, many of them have indoor clinics that you can get in work to. But if you're not able to do that, you know, due to budgetary reasons, you know, exactly what you're talking about, Michael. A great thing to do is just to have that club handy and work on the basics, you know, work on your grip and your posture. And I used to have, you know, in my rec room, I used to have a full-length mirror that I used to, and I actually put, you know, a line of tape vertically so that I could check out my posture and make sure that I was lined up correctly. And I would put markers on the floor and that's how I would do it. I wouldn't necessarily take full swings or anything, but I would just do that to check my positions and make sure that I was doing things correctly. So that's a great point to help some of those people out there that want to improve on their game. What are some
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought, and then.
Yeah, it was funny you brought up the full length mirror. I mean, if any of my students are listening, they'll know. I ask them after the end of every first lesson if they own a full length mirror. If they don't, they need to go buy one. I mean, they're like $8 from Target, you know. And the other thing, I actually, instead of using tape is great. I actually have them use dry erase markers. And so if we're working on swing plane and taking the club back up properly on their proper swing plane for their body, because not everybody swings back on the same plane or swings down on the same plane. At least that's just my opinion. But we can use that line if they can have their wife or their kids or somebody have them set up and draw that line, and it can always be erased, rewritten on again, and it works really well. And it's a really good way, because when you're practicing, you need some sort of feedback. Now you don't want to become dependent on that feedback, or you'll never you'll never get better, because you'll play golf and you'll be looking for the mirror. Where's the mirror? I need to bring it out on the golf course with me, but you can't. So, I always recommend do the first 10 minutes of, if you're practicing for half an hour, do 10 minutes with feedback. And then the second 10 minutes, do, maybe 5 swings with it, 5 swings without it. And keep alternating for 5 or 10 minutes. And then the last 10 minutes or so, completely remove the feedback, so you're not getting any feedback at all and you're just going off of your feel. Because ultimately we need to take this technical change, whatever it is that we're doing, and turning it into a feel on the golf course. How many times you hear on a post-round interview with Tiger Woods or any of those guys, what were you trying to do? I was feeling my right arm a little closer to my side. One swing thought, or just feeling proper posture. Whatever it is, it gets that swing triggered, low and slow, whatever it is, something that works. You need to turn it into a feel and using the golf course.
Right. Now, let me ask you, and there's a reason I want to ask this particular question, because obviously not everybody taking – coming in for lessons is going to be the same way. How do you approach somebody, in your opinion, that you can sense they're very, very timid, very nervous, maybe they haven't played golf very long? How do you sort of come down to their level and be able to communicate with them? Because it's not always, a lot of mistakes I think teachers do, especially the less experienced ones, will come in and just assume everybody's sort of at the same level and try to, talk golf, if you will, and use some of the vernacular and the terminology. How do you, what do you do to sort of assess where that person is? And then how do you, once you've sort of made that assessment, they're a fairly competent golfer, or maybe they're just a real novice golfer, what do you do to make changes to adapt for that particular lesson?
Well, every lesson is different, but when you're first meeting somebody, this weekend I went through Mike Adams' golf bio swing dynamics certification, and basically it's a certification that we screen every student, which I'm still new to the screenings, but I'm starting to feel more comfortable with it. But it's basically, everybody's built differently. I'm built differently than you. I met you today. You're, 8 feet, 5 inches, something like that? You're incredibly tall. I looked up and I saw the ceiling, and you were above it. My goodness. But we're all different, so we need to find a way to measure each other and figure out, all right, well, for instance, downswing plane is a perfect example. So downswing plane, based upon Mike's system, it's really, like he says, it's not really his system. It's just research that he and E.A. Tischler and Dr. David Wright have done. And they all came up, they did it all separately, and they all came up with the same results. This particular example is, for instance, your forearm from the length from your middle knuckle down to your elbow is longer than your elbow up to the shoulder socket. If that is longer, the forearm is longer, you should be swinging down the shoulder plane. The simple explanation is, when you bend your right arm and you're at the top of the backswing, if your right forearm is longer, where's it going to be? Higher or lower? It's going to be higher. So it's going to come down steeper. It's going to come down the shoulder plane. A perfect example of someone who had that and changed and started playing awful is Martin Keimer. He won the PGA, number one player in the world. He's a shoulder planer. Mike has measured him. His forearm is, I think he said, about an inch and a half or an inch longer than his upper arm.
Right.
And he worked with an instructor to get him down to closer to the arm plane or the shaft plane. And what happened? He very quickly fell off number one. And now he's going back the other direction, and we're starting to see Martin Keimer's name on the leaderboard again.
Right.
You know, so that's just a simple example. But, you know, I mean, as far as to kind of touch on the first part of the question that you had about as far as, you know, players that come in, you know, maybe a little more timid, you know, I try and just have fun with them. You know, I joke around with them, with my juniors, a lot of juniors come in and they're kind of timid. I have a little swim noodle that I'll use if they get real timid. I'll just, you know, and they're just so rigid that they won't do it right. Every time I have them do the drill and they don't do it right, I just tap them on the head with the noodle. And they start laughing and they start relaxing.
Yeah,
they start doing it
right.
You
have to have something to sort of break the ice.
Don't think I'm abusing my students. I'm not. I'm just having them, you know, just something to lighten the mood, a joke, anything that will get them to relax because, you know, if the muscles are tight, you're not going to be able to do the move the way your body's supposed to do it.
Well, exactly. And you know, it is intimidating for a lot of, especially new beginning golfers that come out there, and I'm sure a lot of the instructors that have come on the program before would attest to, it can be very daunting and very intimidating for somebody coming out, especially when they're dealing with a teaching professional who's obviously got a number of years of experience and is a good player, and it's been more so, you know, among women and juniors because they don't really have a skill set yet, and they're still a little newer to the game than what some of the men are. And so you have to have a way of sort of breaking the ice. You've got the real key that I've found over the years. I mean, I've been teaching privately for a number of years now, and I've played myself since I was very, very young. My father really took me out and taught me the ropes, and he was an extremely good golfer. In fact, he had blown his knee out some years ago downhill skiing, but if he hadn't have done that, he would have had the ability to, I'm sure, make it on tour. He was that good. But, you know, so he sort of taught me the basics and went from there. But But I can remember when I was first learning the game, you know, I was very intimidated. I was, you know, believe it or not, with the talking I do now, I was actually very shy as a youngster. And, you know, when you're trying to learn something that you know, for the first time, and you're sort of in an environment where there's a lot of good people around you, it can be very intimidating and very cumbersome. And what I try to do when I'm teaching is once I've done that sort of assessment like you've done, get an idea of where their game is at and what abilities they have and legitimately have, not what they profess to have, because that's something you have to guard against too, I think, and I'm sure you've seen that as well, where, you know, somebody will talk their game up a little better than what it is, and you get out there in the practice range and you know, you'll see them, they're not hitting that well, and they seem to be very confused. And something that I mentioned last week in the program, and I'm sure you've seen this, what I like to do is, and you know, jump in here in a second, but what I like to do is when I'm getting ready to give a lesson, I like to sort of stand off before I come up and sort of do the introduction, and I like to watch and see how they warm up when they're getting ready for me to come out. And the thing I find most often, which is very, very interesting, is when they're sort of in their warm-up and, you know, I'm getting ready to come out, they'll just sort of hit ball after ball after ball. But when I come up and I'll say, okay, you know, John, Bill, or whatever, you know, let's hit a couple of shots, they'll go through a whole pre-shot routine. And I'll say to them, you know, I was watching a few minutes ago and you didn't do what you're doing right now. Why? And I think a lot of people get caught off guard because they feel like they need to do that when they're in the middle of their lesson, but they don't do that. And it's important that if you're going to become a good player or even a decent player, you have to form some sort of a pre-shot routine, and you have to do that all the time, whether you're playing or practicing. And a lot of amateurs, particularly the weekend warriors, do not do that. unless they're in front of an instructor or something of that effect. Do you find that a lot as well?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I say a pre-shot and a post-shot routine is extremely important.
Sure.
I mean, when we go out for playing lesson, post-shot routines are just as important as pre-shot. I mean, if you hit a poor shot and you don't happen to look down and see that your divot was 20 yards to the right or 20 yards to the left,
right?
You know, you're trying to put these pieces together. That's a clue that can help you say, all right, well, Mike and I are working on not coming over the top. Well, that divot was 20 yards to the right. I need to exaggerate that move that we're working on a little bit more. I think the big thing is with the pre-shot routine, you know, with practice, I think it's great to have it in practice. But there are times where, you know, that with my research and a lot of other top 100 pros that I've talked to, taught me the same way, is that, you know, there's two different kinds of practice. You have technique practice and you have practicing to play. If you're working on technique,
right,
then you don't need to go through your pre-shot routine. Just make sure your setup is right every time. That's
right.
Key. You know, so every time I have, even in technique practice, I have my golfers step in with one foot, take a step with their left, take a step with their right, so the ball position's the same every time. So in a way, that's part of their pre-shot routine.
Right.
But at the same time, if we're working on something, for instance, I was out with Ted Sheftick last week, and we had one of his students there, and we were working on some hip movements, and every time he would get out of his posture, he would have some trouble getting back into that position. But when he stayed in the posture, he could feel what he needed to do. So we had him do that for a good probably 20 to 30 minutes, so he could feel where that left hip needed to go. The left hip, for him, he was really sitting deep into a squat, creating like a dynamic
right.
S posture with his body, which wasn't good for him. He wasn't engaging his core like he should be. If you want to, that's more of like the biomechanical reason behind it. But so we had him do some drills and stuff like that where he wasn't really worried about ball position or anything like that. He was just getting to a good setup position with his, with his hips up and out like they're supposed to be and club on the ground and then turning back, getting the hips to move properly. After 20 or 30 minutes, we can move on to, all right, now let's set up to a ball, do that same thing, and let's hit a golf ball. Let's try that for about 10 or 15 minutes. If it doesn't work, let's go back to some drills. And keep going back and forth. Eventually they'll get it. Some people take, like you said earlier, it takes longer with some people than others. That's the beauty of this business. I mean, I love that when, one guy picks it up really quick. I like the guys that don't pick it up just as much because it challenges me. I mean, you really, in the teaching business, you need to know how to say the same thing 20 different ways. Because one way won't respond with one person and it will to another. So you need to know how to say it a different way.
Well, and also too, and I've said this many times before, one of the things that I've noticed over the years, and I'm one of them, I'll be honest, I'm more of a visual person. I have an easier time learning if I visually watch somebody. A lot of times, if somebody was explaining something to me, over the phone, I'll try to visualize it in my mind. And, obviously, over time, you get experience and you're able to do that. But for somebody that's sort of just learning up the game, sometimes people are more of a visual as opposed to getting it from a book or something of that nature. And I think that, you have to be able to demonstrate what it is that you're talking about just so that people see, oh, okay, sort of have that aha moment. Okay, yeah, okay, I understand now what you're trying to explain. So you have to be able to converse both ways. You have to be able to explain it to them, but you also have to be able to physically show them what it is they need to do, because there are some people out there that learn differently, and that's how they learn, is by visual movement.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest things you can do in a first lesson is, if you're working on playing, do a couple different things. I mean, the three ways that people learn, you have auditory, kinesthetic, and visual. So everybody learns in a combination of those three. However, everyone has a dominant side. For me, I'm more of a visual learner. If I can see it, I can do it. But some people can't. They'll see it and be like, that means nothing to me. This is like reading Chinese algebra. I just can't figure this out. But other people can say it. I'll usually throw them some tour videos, or I'll actually go up there and demonstrate what they're doing and what I want them to do. If that doesn't work, I'll move into telling them just as they're doing it. you know, that kind of gives me an idea if they're learning better, you know, with the auditory learning. And if that doesn't work, I'll move them to where they'll actually be. And a lot of times I'm using a combination, or I'll do all three. But someone will always click better one way or another. And a lot of times when you're first getting to know a student, that's why the first couple lessons usually take, you know, you just got to figure out which one works best so you can connect with the student. I mean, connection with your students is huge. And if you don't, you're not going to be very successful, no matter how much you know. You need to have fun with them and connect, you know, and figure out which way they respond to the instruction.
The way I've always looked at the golf business, and particularly in the teaching end of it, you really have to be a salesman of sort. And to give you a further example, years ago when I was I used to work in the office equipment business, and I can remember, you know, there were a lot of guys that were very technical and knew the equipment. They were from the service end of it, but they didn't have that sort of forwardness and you know, communication skill, if you will, to be able to articulate. They were too technical. And, you know, there are some that were able to make that transition. But being a professional teacher or coach, you have to have almost like a salesman-like quality, because you've got to be able to sell what it is that you're doing. You can have all the technical knowledge you want. You can understand all the bioswing mechanics and things of a golf swing. But if you're not able to you know, sort of explain that and articulate that in a way that the student can understand, you're not going to be a very effective teacher.
Absolutely.
You know, the one thing that concerns me, and I'm curious to see, especially from you know, somebody a little bit younger in the business, what your take on this, because obviously, you know, as you probably saw when you were at the show today, you're much younger than I am, so you have a different perspective, I'm sure, on things. But the younger generation tends to be very... the younger generation tends to be very technical and likes all of the not just the video, but all the new technology and that. But one of the things that concerns me is that at times maybe the industry has to be careful that they don't get too technical, because not everybody can learn that way. And I know a lot of the younger ones are able to do that, but there's still some out there that have a difficult time and are challenged by that. So how do we strike a balance from not being too technical and too much technology and implementing that into our teaching aspect? How do we find that? How do we strike that balance?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question. I mean, that's really the million-dollar question. I mean, I think to me, it really comes down to, for the instructor, we should know every ounce of detail we can find about the golf swing. You know,
sure.
We should have different technologies. You know, for instance, FlightScope is an outstanding product. You know, when we talk about the PGA show, we'll get more into that. But, but for instance, you know, K-Vest or any motion measurement system, video, you know, that's all great stuff. But if you get too technical and explain it to a person in such great detail, they're going to get more confused than they are, you know, they're not going to play well. You know, if you just explain it simply and say, look, this is what you're doing. This is the drill we're going to do to stop it, and that's it. You don't need to explain the hows and the whys and all that stuff. Just get them better. That's it. I was talking to Ted today, Ted Sheftick, and, you know, it's amazing. I mean, he's been in the business for a long time, long before technology.
Right.
And he's just as an effective teacher now as he was then. Now, he may be slightly more effective because of the technology. Now, that's based on opinion. But, you know, and he's got all the technology, but he still knows how to connect with the students. He's got students who are 90-plus years old, and he's got kids that are 10 years old. But he knows how to connect with all of them. But the way he says it, you can have all these gadgets you want. You can have K-Vest. You can have FlightScope. You can have, you know, a video software. You can have all this stuff. But every once in a while, students aren't going to get it. You're going to have to just roll up your sleeves and go in there and get trans 30 and show them what they're doing wrong. Turn the video cameras off. Turn everything off and just say, let's do some work and let's get you better, because technology is not working right now. It does work. Don't get me wrong. Technology is an amazing thing. It's a great learning tool. But sometimes there's just a time and a place where you just got to roll your sleeves up and go in there and do some work, do your job. You know,
well, one of the things too that, and the reason why I was kind of going down that path is, and just listening to some of the other professionals talk, and certainly not by any means, I think the majority of them are on the same page, but there are some out there that tend to get too involved in the technology. And even walking around today, I noticed that some of the swing simulators and things like that, a lot of the people that are in there testing out the equipment are very focused on their numbers and, how far and the club head speed and thing. And those are certainly important things to know. But I think sometimes we have to be careful that we don't get too caught up in the technology that we forget some of the basics, because the bottom line is I don't care what technology you use. If somebody isn't getting how to get the ball from point A to point B, all the technology is not going to help. If they're not grasping and understanding that, I don't care what you put in front of them. Sometimes I think we have to be careful. The way I look at it is technology that's out there now is something to further enhance what we're already doing. In other words,
exactly.
It's going to complement and make it easier in some ways, but not overtake the skill and the knowledge that we are trying to bring forth to that student. Because at the end of the day, and it's just like, and we'll talk about that too as well, but it's just like some of the equipment that's out there. I mean, it's great that they can advertise that it's going to give you all these extra yards and it's going to do all these things and create all this extra backspin. But if you don't know how to put the club face on the ball properly and you don't know how to execute the shots correctly, that technology is not going to do very much for you, certainly
Absolutely.
Not to the level that they're professing. But Michael, let's do this for just real quick second here. I need to just take a quick little pause and I'm going to go over to the Ryder Cup, and then we'll get right back into it here. So just hang tight there, Michael. And for those of you tuning in, my very special guest this evening, he's a PGA apprentice and soon to be a full-fledged PGA teacher professional up in the Reading, Pennsylvania area. And right now he is down here in Orlando, Florida with me, and we're just talking here on Golf Talk Live a little bit about his apprentice program and what he's planning on doing in the next phase of his career. But before we get back with Michael, I just want to remind everybody that we are live right now on Golf Talk Live at blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive. So if you want to pass that link around, I'd certainly love to get more and more of you tuning in every week. And if you want to call into the program, if you want to talk to either Michael or myself, we would certainly love to hear from you. Always glad to take a call here. And you can do so by calling in at area code 646-716-4667 through an extra six in there. Or you can email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And while you're on the internet anyways, surfing around on Facebook, make sure that you visit my page and like it. It's Golf Talk Live blog. Make sure you have blog on the end there. And also follow me on Twitter at TedandBuckCEO. And also you can surf around on the website at golftalkliveblog.com. Now for those of you that want to go over to the Ryder Cup a little bit later on this year, I got a great deal for you. The people at sportseventsaccommodations.com wanted me to let you know that if you're looking to rent some property over during the Ryder Cup in 2014, that's taking place September 23rd to the 28th of this year, and that's going to be over in Perthshire, Scotland, then you've found the perfect place. Sports Events Accommodation has a stunning range of properties varying in size and shape, so they will definitely have something there to suit you. The team that have many years' experience in the sport and renting accommodations. And it's their aim to provide you all with your renting requirements for really the biggest team event, golf event in the world at an affordable price. So if you're interested in checking that out, you can visit their website at www.sportseventsaccommodation.com, or you can send an email to get more information to Audrey Coates, that's Coates, and you can email her at info@sportseventsaccommodation.com. So make sure if you want to get over there, for those of you that like a little team competition, you want to go over there and check out the Ryder Cup over in Scotland. If you want to do that later in the fall, make sure that you check out sportseventsaccommodation.com. Michael, let's just wrap up a little bit more about your transition here, and then I want to get into talk a little bit about something that I know that you've been working on, and you wanted to have an opportunity to come on here and talk about it tonight. But you're now just waiting to get sort of the final credentials in place, and then you're going to be ready to go. What are some of the other things that you've been doing while you were down here at the PGA show to further help get you ready for that next phase? Hello, Michael? You back? Well, I guess Michael must have taken a little bit of a break, so let me just hang on here. Let me just remind everybody that we are on here every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time here on blogtalkradio.com. And I guess Michael must have excused himself, and we'll just give him a moment here to come back and join us here. If you can hear me, Michael, we're back. And just let me know when you're here and available. We'll continue on. Don't forget, we're going to be starting up, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about a little bit later about this. But don't forget, beginning March 6th of 2014, we're going to be starting a new segment called Coach's Corner, and that'll be the first hour of every Thursday night's Golf Talk Live broadcast. And we're going to have a panel of coaches on here, including Michael is going to participate as well. And we're going to give you guys an opportunity to phone into the program and or email into the program with some questions and get some tips from some of the great instructors that have been on this program in the past and some ones that are coming up in the future. So let me just double check. Michael, are you back? No, he must have stepped out. Let me just double check and make sure we haven't lost our connection here. No, Michael's still with us. He must have taken a little bit longer break. So don't forget to March 6th. We'll be starting the Coach's Corner segment, and that's going to be your opportunity to call or email your questions to the program and pick the brains of some of the best coaches and teaching pros in the business. Each week I have a different panel, so we'll cover a new topic each week, plus help you weekend warriors improve your golf game. So be sure to call in during the live broadcast, which is at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, or you can email your questions to questions.golftalklive@gmail.com, and you can send those in right away. And what I'll do is I'll keep them and read a few of them out each week to the panel, and make sure that you include who you are and where you're you know, from. And we're probably going to have some prizes along the way as well for some of you participating in that, some great gifts. So make sure that you tune in each and every week here on Golf Talk Live. Let me just double check. Michael, are you back yet? No, I guess we've lost Michael. While I wait for him to get back, I'll just keep an eye on here. While I was at the show, one of the interesting things that I saw, had a chance to be able to talk to some of the people that have been on the program. Just to give you an example, Kelsey Abernathy, who was on here, she has the business, the clothing line, For Kids Golf, and she has a booth down there. It's booth number 4460, and she has some great, great clothing. She was on a guest here. She was actually the first guest this year, and she's got some great clothing. So if you're down here checking out the PGA show, make sure that you go and visit her at booth number 446. Let me just get in touch with Michael. Sent me a text here. I think he's having some technical problems on his. And let me just send him a quick text here, and we'll be right back. I think he's just having some issues on his end with his phone, so I will just very quickly do that. Oh, here he's coming back now. Hi, Michael, you're back?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, that's good. I wondered, I thought maybe you'd taken a little, that's not a problem. I thought you were taking a little hiatus there, so I was just trying to give you a few minutes, but then I saw you you trying to call back in, so that's good. I'm glad you got back.
I was listening the whole time I was talking and then realized I wasn't on. That was my phone dropped the call. Sorry about that. I was just having a good time talking
to
myself, apparently.
I've been there and done that before. Anyways, I just wanted to read out a little bit about the Ryder Cup next year. Some group over in Scotland wants to offer some accommodations to the listeners out there that are interested in going over for the Ryder Cup next year. So I was reading that out while we took a quick break. But Michael, let's talk about some of the things that that you've been doing this week since you've been down here at the PGA Show. I mean, obviously, you've been walking around checking out some of the exhibits, but there were some other things. I know you were doing the Mike Adams Golf Bioswing certification. But what were some of the other things that you've been doing since you've been down here at the PGA Show?
It's been a busy week. You know, the certification, I flew in on Saturday, and we had the certification all day Sunday and Monday. Before that, I played with I played nine holes with one of the tour players that I'm working with now. He plays on some mini tours down here, played a couple web.com tour events, and we just started working together. So we had a good time on Saturday enjoying being able to wear short sleeves. You know, we don't get to do that in Pennsylvania in January. So,
no.
Yeah, or Canada from where you're from, you know. But
no.
So other than that, I mean, we had we had demo day on Tuesday, which was a blast until we got rained on. And then we had the top teachers forum or the open teaching forum there on Tuesday night, which was a lot of fun. I mean, there were some of the best instructors in the business there that night, and you know, we had some presentations from Dr. Robert Neal, who owns Golf Biodynamics or Golf Diamond Dynamics. The names between Mike's and Dr. Rob's is very similar, so. But it's you know, he's a golf biomechanist. He's been in the business researching the golf swing for, like, I think 25 years, just researching the golf swing. And
right.
So he did a presentation, which was a lot of fun to hear, talking about pitching, you know, the mechanics of pitching, mm-hmm. and what his research has shown. And, you know, like we talked about earlier, technology is kind of just basically proving the fact that all these teachers that have been around the block for so long know what they're talking about, you know.
Right.
And then... you know, Wednesday, just kind of going to meetings. I've been looking at purchasing a flight scope, which I ended up pulling the trigger on. So that's a really good advancement that I now have that I can use with my students, getting club data and ball data. Like we talked about earlier, it's great technology to use if we need it. You know.
Right.
And you know, just looking at some stuff and. You know, just hanging around a lot of teachers. We just like, you know, especially me, I like learning from as many instructors as possible. I mean, I don't think there's anything you can't learn by listening to somebody else. I don't care who they are. But this week's been really special. I've been hanging around with some of the best guys in the business. You know, Ted Shestick, Mike Adams, Stan Utley. It's just been a great week. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, and that's important, especially, you know, for somebody starting out or, you know, I mean, I know you've played and been around golf for a long time. So when I say that, I mean, as a, you know, a teacher professional, you're still sort of, you know, getting your feet wet, as it were. I think it's very important to gather as much information and sort of adapt it to your style. I mean, everybody's different. Every teacher is different. But it's good to get some different perspectives, because a lot of times, and this is one of the things that I've been trying to do with this program, is by having, you know, different instructors and coaches and things on here, try to get a different perspective for the audience, so that it's not just the same. You know, I could very easily, you know, as an instructor, sort of give my views all the time, and they might be received very well, but, you know, after a while, somebody might be interested in a different opinion or want to hear a different approach to things. So this is how we keep things fresh in the business, is exchanging ideas and sharing ideas. And that's one of the things that I want to do here on Golf Talk Live, by having you know, a number of different instructors on here. Michael, before we'll get into the PGA Show a little bit. I mean, we're not going to get into too much of it tonight, but we've still got some more things to check out tomorrow. But I know you wanted to come on. You wanted to talk about something that you've been working on here called Alleys to Fairways. Give us a little bit of background on it first. What is Alleys to Fairways? What it's about, and where are you trying to move in the future with this? So just give the listeners a little bit of an idea what it is and what your vision is for it.
Alleys to Fairways. You know, I started, you know, not really as Alleys to Fairways, but I started it back in 2007. I originally called it the Camp Lenora Foundation after my grandmother. And, you know, we just happened to give a clinic to a group of kids from the inner city in Baltimore. You know, a lot of the kids had been involved with the law and you know, but most of them, they just very poverty-stricken. And half of them, more than half, actually, I think 75% of them had never seen a golf course before in their entire life, which a lot of us might say, how's that possible? But they're stuck in the city.
Right.
You know, so they don't get to see that kind of stuff. So we took them out of the city for the day. Took them to Bully Rock, and if the viewers don't know anything about Bully Rock, Bully Rock is a top 100 public facility in America, and I mean, it's just a really special golf course. It's a lot of fun. It's a Pete Dye design, very difficult golf course. They hosted the LPGA Championship there and stuff like that, so they got to see a world-class golf course. And, you know, we just took them out, introduced them to the game. I had a couple of the pros from Bully Rock help me, and you know, Peter Bowman, Rick Brownsville, they helped me out a lot, and helped me teach the clinic. And you know, we just had a fun day. You know, some of their parents attended, and we taught them how to swing a golf club, how to hit chip shots. We used hula hoops and had them try and chip into the hula hoop, and just some fun games. Teach them about golf. And then afterwards, you know, I just hit some shots for them, hit some trick shots. You know, tried to hit, and we had a couple signs up at the end of the range, or at the, about 20 yards in front of me at the end of the actual hitting range. So, you know, it's kind of like a big break kind of thing, trying to hit that and
right.
Break the signs, which was cool, and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I didn't really think much of it until a few years ago when, you know, I found out that most of them ended up, you know, getting their life on track. Some of them went to college. You know, some of them, a lot of them started playing golf. There was a couple courses in Baltimore City that they would walk to. And, you know, so
right.
I kind of took it off of that. And, you know, I'm basically, you know, I'm just trying to get involved with kids, you know, of all ages. I mean, you know, our target group is really 14 to 24-year-olds. You know, really we'll take just about anybody that wants to get away from the city, or if they're in it, you know, most of these guys are coming and gals are coming from probation offices, rehab facilities, stuff like that, and getting them away from, you know, their life as it is now and introducing them to golf. You know, we know golf has done wonders for my life. I'm sure it's done the same for yours. I mean,
sure.
I wouldn't be where I am right now without this game. So, you know, basically just introduce them to a game that they can play for a long time, something that, you know, that they can experience with their friends, their family. And so, you know, ideally it'll build to a national program. I have a meeting tomorrow with Bob Baldessari from the PGA of America. He and I have been talking for a couple years, and he really likes the idea. So I'm hoping that we can get some support from the national PGA. I already have the support of the section. But we're going to be putting
right.
on a big clinic. I'm shooting for 100 kids for the first one. Get 20 guest instructors, try and get, you know, some of the best instructors from our area out to the golf course, and you know, have some fun with them, and have follow up clinics. You know, if you have some courses in the area, we'd be willing to block off some of their times, you know, whether it be slow parts of the day or whatnot, to where the probation officers or the supervisors from the rehab facilities can take these groups of kids back out to the golf course on a you know, fairly regular basis while they're there, and incorporate that as a part of their rehab, you know, their rehabilitation. You know, and really it's just, you know, that's basically the long and the short of it, and just, you know, trying to incorporate it into, you know, I mean, I'm sure you know a little bit about Golf 2.0 and its new, you know, trying to grow the game.
Right.
And, you know, we're trying to do that, but it's also about helping these guys out too.
Well, What sort of caught my eye is what you had said a few minutes ago about how, you know, a lot of them, it wasn't just sort of a one-time thing, and, you know, that was, you know, thank you very much, it was nice to get out and do something different. It sort of inspired them to want to do things differently with their lives. And really, I think that, you know, golf has been said many, many times over by many, many people that golf really mimics life in so many ways. And one of the things that makes golf really stand above so many other sports is obviously, with the exception of things like the Ryder Cup and that and President's Cup, golf is really an individual sport. And and although it's good to be involved in team sports, playing golf really, I found with myself, and I'm sure many others, it really helped me to grow, because it caused me, it really forced me to focus. In order to become a better player and to be a good teacher, you had to really, you know, buckle down and you know, hit the books and hit the driving range and things like that and get out there and play. But it really it really taught me a lot on a personal level, you know, in my journey in playing golf and teaching. And I think it's good that you're doing something like this. You know, it's great for teachers to go out there and be doing their craft and that, but we also have to find ways of giving back. And although there's a lot of great charity causes that the PGA Tour and the LPGA and that does, monetarily, we also have to be giving of our time. And this is a particular group of individuals coming from, as you said, a lot of these inner city kids that really don't have a lot. They don't understand. They don't have the accessibility that maybe you and I might have. And by introducing to a sport, showing them that it's not, you know, an elitist sport, even though, you know, it has been sort of labeled that for many years, golf is growing into different areas thanks to players like Tiger Woods and some of the others that have opened the game to a whole different generation. And, you know, you're sort of the next step in that generation where more and more people, I hear this all the time from different instructors that I've had on the program, that they're doing things similar to what you're doing. But in maybe junior camps and things like that. And I think it's so important in order to grow this game that we have to, as instructors, we have to be willing to give back and get in there into these groups that otherwise would not have access. And so I'm certainly willing to help in any way that I can, Michael, with this. So just, you know, certainly keep me updated as things progress along, and I'll certainly do what I can using the program and also, you know, from a teaching end, if I can help in any way, I'd certainly be more than happy to do that. I think it's a great cause, and I applaud you for getting your feet in there and working hard on it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm definitely taking up on that. I mean, my biggest thing is, you know, it's not about the game. It's not about us. It's about them. And, you know, me, it's a little different. This is close to me because, you know, I spent between playing and getting back into the business, I spent almost 2 years as a law enforcement officer. I saw firsthand what
yep.
their lives could be like if they keep going down that road. And, you know,
right.
Now that I'm not in that position where I can make a difference through that kind of a job, you know, I want to still be able to do something to where, you know, and just, even if it's just give the bug to another golf professional in another state, in another city, that is like,
right.
hey, that's a great idea. I should call them and we work out a deal where we can, you know, I can
right.
do something like this in my town. You know, and, you know, that's why Bob, you know, I've been talking with Bob down at the PGA for a couple of years, and he loves it. And, you know, his hope and my hope, I believe, is to try and get it incorporated into, you know, the Play Golf America campaign and, you know, get it put out there at a national level to where, you know, we can try and make a difference in the community. I mean, if more people would try and help their own communities out, well, guess what? We'd be in a lot better shape than we are right now. I'm not going to get into that conversation.
Right.
You know,
that's,
but
yeah,
either way,
we're not going
it's all about the philanthropy. Right? You know, it's
yeah,
about the philanthropy. It's about giving back, and it's about helping people that don't have the things that you have. I'm very, very lucky that I get to make my living in a game that I love. And even if
right.
I just get, you know, even if we can just get a couple kids to do that, you know, that's better than none, in my opinion.
Well, it's a step in the right direction, and it's so true. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, we forget on the outside, you know, and you being in law enforcement there for a few years, you got to see firsthand, as you said, a lot of these young men and even women that unfortunately make some bad choices in life. And we all make bad choices, but sometimes there are consequences with those choices. And, you know, it's important that we recognize that they're still human beings, and you know, we have to learn to move past it and help them, you know, make better choices in their lives. And golf is a great way to introduce them to that, because it's something that a lot of these kids never had an exposure to, and for whether it was due to economic reasons or just, you know, geographic reasons where they were located, they just didn't have accessibility. But what you're doing is really, I think, a fantastic thing, because I think any time that we can do something such as this and reach out to a community like that, I think it says a lot about the game, and it says a lot about the people in it. And that's one thing that I've been very, very proud being in the golf community, more so. And that's not to say that other sports professions don't get involved with charities and things like that or activities such as this. But golf has always really kind of taken a very bold step over the years, doing different programs and getting involved with the juniors. And I think it's so important. And I think the more that we can do that and the more that we can network and work together, as you said, to maybe one day make this a national-type program, think how good it would be if we could take some of these young kids and young, even young adults who have maybe been led astray, whether it be through drugs or some other issue, that if we can find a way to show them a better path through almost like a rehabilitation, if you will, and show them that their lives have not been thrown away, that they can still have an opportunity. And by reaching out and doing what you're doing, Michael, that's exactly what's going to happen in the long run. And as you said, even if it's only one or two initially, those success stories will be able to manifest themselves into more success stories. And eventually, it's almost like a pay it forward. You know, once you get one or two happening in a positive light, they're going to talk about it and maybe, you know, almost be a spokesperson, if you will, for doing that again and repeating that formula. So my hat's off to you for you know, coming up with this and wanting to jump in, as I said, with both feet. And I'm certainly willing to do what I can to help you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, if anybody that's listening is interested in helping, you know, feel free. You know, my information, I think, is already on your page. But if not, I can give you my website. Feel free to call me, email me with any questions if you want. If you want to do something like this in your area, you know, give me a call. I mean, like you said, I mean, bottom line is they're all people. We're not better than them. They're not better than us. We're all human
right.
beings. You know, God made every single one of us, so it doesn't matter where we grew up, what we were given. It makes no difference. Golf is a game of life. I mean, it really is. You make a mistake, you forget about it, and you move on. That's the whole purpose.
That's
of
right. Well, and the thing is, golf, why I said it mimics life is the one thing that you learn once you've been playing golf for a little while is, as you said, once you make a mistake, the idea is to learn from that and then improve the next time around. And it's the same thing with life. You know, you make a mistake. Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, obviously, sometimes it can happen. But it also shows, too, that to these individuals, especially these kids, by the community reaching out, and even though it's being initiated by the golf community, it shows them that they're not forgotten or that they're not, you know, any worse off than we are. They might have made some mistakes, but it shows them that the community is still supporting them and willing to give them, you know, another opportunity. And so that's why I'm all for these types of programs that can help, especially, you know, in some of the inner cities and things like that. So definitely keep us posted. Mike, before we close off tonight, I want to make sure that you read out how folks can get in touch with you. So we'll do that towards the end of the program. But let's get on to the PGA show here a little bit. And, you know, as we both had talked about earlier, you know, off the air, we both had an opportunity to walk around and see some of the different things. And I'm going to do as you are again tomorrow. But what were some of the things that really sort of caught your eye at the show? And I know you didn't get to see everything, but what were some of the things that stood out in your mind that you really sort of took a shining to and think that you want to share with the listeners here?
Yeah, I mean, there's been quite a few things that are coming out that are pretty good. I mean, the two instruction pieces, I guess we'll start there. The two instruction
sure.
pieces that I really liked, and I think it's good for the consumer, and it's great that these companies are doing this now because they're making it more affordable for, you know, the average Joe to buy. And, you know, and it's just it's just another tool that you can have, you know, whether it be in your house or, at, you know, take it with you on the golf course. But, you know, the first one was, you know, that I was really excited to see was FlightScope. You know, they came out, they've always caught my eye, you know, FlightScope TrackMan, you know, that's, you know, they've always had a little bit of a rivalry going on. And, you know, with reason, they're both great products. I've never met anybody who owns a FlightScope that doesn't like it. I've never met anyone and owns a TrackMan that doesn't like it, you know. But you know,
right.
FlightScope for me, I've been using it a lot longer. But FlightScope's coming out with a smaller, they call it their X2. That's, you know, we'll call that their Cadillac.
Right.
But they came out with a different one this year, two actually new models. But the one in particular is mainly for consumers. It's the XI model, and it's really an awesome. Sam, I mean, it does just about everything my full-fledged X2 will do. it doesn't read as much of the club data and it doesn't read as much of the ball data, but it gives you enough to get by and learn
right.
from it and take what we're working on in your golf swing and say, all right, well, you know, my club was traveling from the inside too much, the ball launched too high, and you learn that from your PGA professional that you're working with. But this one, like a normal one of these products, I mean, they can run upwards of $10,000-$11,000. This one is
right.
a consumer model, and they're listing it at $2,500, which is, all considering for a Doppler system, something that guys on tour use for, especially, it's more for, like, the better golfer, in my opinion, just
sure.
because, the beginning golfer shouldn't have to worry about those numbers or anything like that. It's just more about, giving you a swing you can mold and things like that. But the XI is just, it's really great. I had the opportunity to get a demo of it today. It's really efficient. It works really well. And, really it's all, all things considered, it's really, price-wise, it's really not that bad. If you're really looking to improve your game and take your game to the next level, that's something that you can really use. Swing Guru was the other one that I really liked. Swing Guru is basically, in its simplest words, is Xbox Kinect on steroids. It's insane. And I don't know, did you get a chance to see that today?
I didn't actually make it over there. That's one of the things I'm going to check tomorrow. But tell the listeners a little bit about what it is and what it's all about. And for those that aren't familiar with it, give them a little bit of insight.
Right. So Swing Guru, it's essentially wireless. You can just plug it into your computer. And it's basically a camera that looks, if you've seen an Xbox Kinect, it looks exactly the same. It's essentially an infrared camera. And through that camera,
right.
it gets 30,000 different pixels, and it creates your image onto the screen. The crazy thing about it is it's one camera is placed in front of you. So if you read my article on golfwrx.com about camera angles, it's from the face-on angle. Okay, so
right.
you put it on that face-on angle, you can also see the down-the-line version because it populates and sees where your body is in space when you calibrate it. In the beginning, it takes about 30 seconds to calibrate. It's extremely easy. You can see the down-the-line version, down the target line. And you can also see
right.
the top-down, which is really good because you can see shoulder turn versus hip turn. So that's a big thing
right.
that a lot of beginners need is to learn how to make a proper shoulder turn. I can't tell you how many beginners come to me and they turn back and they turn 50 degrees. And they're that's barely halfway back. We want a good, roughly 90-degree shoulder turn. Look at the best players in the world. They're turning and they're back to the target, But this, there's so many things it can do. It measures your center of gravity similar to a force plate technology. It just basically populates your body, memorizes it, and then you go up there and swing, and there's not one sensor on you. And it knows exactly where you are in space, and time and space, I should say, because it measures, it records when you make a swing and records impact. It sees where your hands are at the bottom, and it records. And it's got other features that you can train with it. You can set up in proper posture, hit the capture button, and you can actually see a green version of yourself, and you just step into that green version. If you're outside of it, any part of you would turn red, and you just bend over into or stand up slightly, and it turns green. And you can go through seven different parts of the swing, all the way from address, quarter way back, halfway back, top, down to impact, down to all the way through to the finish. And this, they're selling it at $895. For less than $1,000, you can have something that you can use every day. You can get your kids involved with it. It's a great thing for kids. Kids would have a fiesta with this thing.
And you're getting feedback too, which is good. Even as a consumer, instructors can certainly use something like that. But as a consumer as well, it's giving you feedback. This is the one thing that I love about technology. And obviously video was sort of the real first icebreaker in that area. And, one of the things that I really liked about initially, and obviously video is still something that's important, but there's so many different things now that you can do that are even exceeding just your traditional video. Not that video isn't good to have, but that was always sort of a two-dimensional
picture. Now you're getting things in 3D, and you're getting a much more crisp and a better image and understanding with some of the devices that are out there now. And as you said, for under $1,000, I mean, I don't know what the current Xbox is, but I mean, it's probably not that far from it. So
pretty close.
You know, why not?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And who knows?
I
probably
want
made
one.
With a lot
I
of
can't
the same
get one.
Yeah. It's probably made with the same components that are in Xbox. So I mean, the one thing that I noticed, today at the PGA show is a lot of that 3D technology. There were a lot of different booths out there that were using that sort of technology, and that's definitely where the industry is going. And as we alluded to a little bit earlier in the broadcast, it's important as instructors that we sort of keep abreast. And that doesn't mean that we have to use every device that's out there. I mean, it's impossible to be on top of everything. But you have to have a general understanding of where and what direction the industry is going, because one of the big mistakes that some of the, and certainly not the more seasoned ones, but some of the older instructors I know, I've heard people tell me that that are less or more resistant, excuse me, not less, but more resistant to change. And the problem is what happens is if you don't sort of stay, within the curve, and again, that doesn't mean you have to go buy everything. What happens is you start to lose students, because students keep up with technology. They see and hear things all the time. And if you're not sort of keeping up with that, they're going to go somewhere else. So if you want to, keep your teaching fresh, you need to keep your courses updated, but you also need to at least have an understanding of what technology is available. And, maybe not every student is going to be on the Flight Scope or TrackMan, but it's good to have that available or have that understanding of how it works, so that if they're interested in that, you need to be able to say something like, this is how it works and this is the benefits from it, as opposed to sort of scratching your head and saying, I haven't got a clue.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our basically primary concern when we come down here as an instructor is is to sort through all the training as they come out, find out which ones are good and which ones aren't, that aren't worth their time. I mean, those two and, really one other training aid that I saw while I was down here were really, really innovative but effective. They need to be both.
Right.
You can't just be innovative but ineffective, and you can't be, you can kind of be effective and not innovative, but then you're basically doing something that somebody else already did, So you just got to make sure that it's both.
Was it the K-Vest that you were talking about? Was that the other one that you were...
The K-Vest is really good. K-Vest has been around for a lot, but the thing that really impressed me, and it's kind of funny that I organized it this way because each one of these kind of dropped in price significantly, but Zep Labs is called Zep Golf, and if you haven't checked those out today, you got to check them out. It's basically just one sensor that you put on your glove. It can also be used for baseball and tennis. So, like, if you own it and you have a kid that plays tennis or baseball, there's just a little clamp that you put on the bottom of those clubs, and it works the same way. But it measures what's called hand path. And hand path is very important, again, especially for beginners, because they need to know that, that guy that sucks the club way inside and comes over the top. But it's, it's really cheap. It's $150. And it's synced through all these social media things. And it's really interesting that, the guy that, Patrick Shea, one of the golf professionals who helps run the program, he showed me a thing where, you can actually do it, and it gives you a score and based upon where, where it should be. It's got, it's really interesting because it has inside of this little sensor, it's got two sensors, two sensors, a gyroscope and a compass. So if it's got a compass in it, if you're out playing golf and you get lost, you can use that compass to find your way back home, I guess. But it's really, really cool. And you can swing, it gives you a score, and you can send it to one of your friends on Facebook and say, hey, here's my score, bet you can't beat it. And it's just, it's really cool. You can go back and forth, and it's just like what we talked about earlier with the instruction. It's keeping them engaged. It's keeping them learning, but having fun. Why else would we play golf if we're not having fun? There's no point.
Well, and the thing is, staying on technology for just another minute or two, as we talked about, off-air a little bit too, the generation that's now coming up, I mean, obviously my generation, I'm in that I'm going to be 50, as I mentioned to you before, coming up in a couple of months. My generation and older, I take my generation out of that because my generation is you know, more active in a lot of the social media and a lot of the technology. But some of the older generation obviously, you know, found it more difficult to make that transition, so they tend to stay to more of the traditional. But your generation coming up now is really, you know, up to date with that. I mean, and you know, example of that is, you know, you look at some of these young juniors that are coming in at, you know, 10 years old, and they can just absorb this stuff like nobody's business. And, you know, the thing is that as this technology changes, so is the game. And the game is so much better. I mean, if you look at the swings of today compared to the swings of, you know, 30 years ago, I mean, these guys have gotten it down to, you know, literally a millisecond. In their swing, they can pretty much gauge now with all this technology if they're off by, you know, if the club face is just that much open or that much closed, they're able to get that data instantly, and certainly at a tour level provides vital information for them in making a decision on what they need to do and what adjustments they need to make. Now, obviously, for the average consumer, it's a little bit more difficult because they don't have the same understanding of golf, and that's something that, you know, where you and I are trying to educate them as we go along. But that technology is certainly good. Now, one area and we talked about this, and I've said this actually many times on the program, and I'm going to let you talk a little bit about the equipment because I know that you're a Titleist man, and I would be remiss if I didn't let you brag a little bit about Titleist. You were overlooking at some equipment today. So tell us a little bit about that, and then I want to talk about the equipment, something that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you said, I mean, I'm on Titleist staff. I've been for a couple of years, and so obviously I'm biased, you know, but, you know, Titleist makes great products. They always have, you know, their irons, you know, are outstanding. You know, I grew up playing Mizuno irons and Titleist irons. You know, Mizuno makes great irons as well. I don't want to sound like I'm completely Titleist biased because I want, you know, the viewers to get something else, obviously, out of this too, other than just Titleist. You know, but Mizuno and Titleist, I think, are the two best irons in the market. And then I would say Titleist and TaylorMade are probably the two best woods on the market. And I look at that as Titleist is in both of those. They're always in the top, you know, however many. I mean, everyone who knows Titleist knows about Scotty Cameron. Scotty Cameron makes by far the best putters in the business. You know, there's no contest. You know, so I always strive to be the best in my field in teaching. You know, when I first started looking at who I wanted to affiliate myself with, I wanted to partner with a company that always strives to, you know, to be the best in their side of the business of equipment. So, you know, they release the, you know, so each, the way Titleist works, you know, it's not like TaylorMade where they release products every 3 days. You know, it's the Titleist, you know, they have a 2-year life cycle. So this year is the irons. And so the irons, you know, I talked to one of our reps, Bobby Achardo, and he's a great guy. He's actually the Baltimore rep now, but he used to be our rep in Philly. And so I had a chance to sit down with him today and talk to him about some of the things. They made some changes to some of the irons, which is really good. You know, like the AP1s, I said that they're coined as the longest and most forgiving iron they've ever made. And I've hit them, and he's absolutely right. They're extremely long, and they're very, very forgiving. They're very accurate. You know, not really for me. They have, you know, a thicker top line, but for, you know, for the beginning golfers, they're really, Titleist has always been known as player improvement or, you know, player's irons, but not really onto the player improvement side. So they're trying to get into these, you know, AP1s and trying to, you know, like they've added, it's a dual cavity. So there's a cavity, you know, main cavity, and then inside, you know, near the sole of the club, there's an additional cavity, and there's a tungsten weight in there that kind of absorbs some of the shock of the golf ball, which adds to the forgiveness. So they're trying to turn, you know, add in and turn them more into like a player improvement iron, like how Mizuno has their MX series and their MP series, you know, the player series, and then the MX is the game improvement series. But it still has a traditional look, you know, which is nice. They also increased all the lofts a little bit stronger. That's kind of where the trend has been going. Last few years, Titleist is just, you know, they're very traditional, and they're usually left on the bandwagon when it comes to dialing down lofts or anything like that. But they add, you know, they increased their pitching wedge loft to 44 degrees, so they added a gap wedge to the set as a 48 degree. You know, so So that, you know, so that's good. So you're hitting your clubs a little longer. You know, the lofts are correct. You got to make, you know, make sure you get fitter if you're going to get fit for these. But, you know, like the AP2s, you know, a little bit better iron for, you know, for the better player, I mean, not meaning they're better iron. But the AP2s have
right.
two tongues away from them for forgiveness. They have one in the toe and one in the heel. They're more forgiving, but they're not any bigger. So, it, you know, they've basically taken what they had before and just made it better. You know, which is always good. And then, you know, they kept the line of the muscle backs and the cavity backs. They're more like the players' clubs. You know, they changed the sole a little bit to more of a bevel-leaning edge, meaning it's more rounded so it comes in and out of the turf a little easier. And, you know, added some cosmetic changes to it. But, yeah, I mean, all the other stuff with Titleist is about the same. I mean, their woods, the 913 series are by far my favorite woods. I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't really like the 910 series. That's just my opinion. I know some people that love it. But they also added a new shaft recently to the 913. It's their most popular shaft on tour, the Auto Latour Green. It's perfect for the average golfer because it's a mid-launch, mid-spin shaft. You know, and then finally, so I don't ramble on here, you know, they added new wedges to the line this year. They're spin milled 5 wedges, or the SM5s. My favorite one, I don't know if you got a chance to see them or not, but my favorite one is the raw black. It's, so they used to have, you know, like a black nickel. Now it's just a raw,
yeah,
like, you know, like a flat black that you'll see on, like, I forget the NFL team that had the, you know, had that flat black helmet this year. But it's a really, really cool look, and it will oxidize over time, you know, so it'll rust a little bit, which is normal. It might add a little bit,
yeah,
to the playing, you know, the play of the wedge, but it will actually help it last longer, which is good. But yeah, I mean, they're good. They're awesome. They've added a couple of new grinds to the wedges, which, you know, I won't really get into much with that, because I can't really show you the grinds. They're really hard to describe.
Right.
You know, or something like this. And then, you know, they've added a couple of new putters. Scotty Cameron is, you know, has a dual balance putter where there's 50 grams in the top and then the head is 50 grams. So it's similar to Counterbalance,
right.
Basically, you know, the easiest way to describe it. So it's, you know, we know that in a few years we can't play mid-length and long-length putters that are anchored to the body. So they're starting to find things that they can replace them with, and dual balance is one. So if you normally play like a 34-inch putter, you want something that's 3 inches longer, so you'll buy a 47-inch dual balance. And that goes with any of them. You know, TaylorMade makes they call it a counterbalance. I think Odyssey makes it now as well, a counterbalance. And I think Ping is working
right
on it.
Right. Once one of them comes out with it, it's like any product that, you know, they're all coming out with their own version and, you know, a few modifications. So let me ask you, and I mean, you know, we obviously both know the answer to this, but I want you to share with the listeners, for those that, out there that are not in the golf profession and want to maybe pick up some insight here. We obviously, you and I understand the importance of being fitted properly for clubs and things like that, and I think most people have that understanding now. But what's one of the common errors that you see when people are making a decision buying equipment? I mean, I can think of a couple, but what's one particular that you see? What some common mistakes that people are making when they're purchasing? You know, whether it be, it doesn't necessarily have to be a new set, but new clubs. What are they maybe not looking at and considering before they make that purchase? And that could be, you know, in irons or a wood or even a puttering.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with the woods, it comes down to shaft. Shaft is by far more important than head. I mean, you could put the wrong shaft in that 913 driver, and you can give me an old, you know, 983K, but put the proper shaft in it, and I bet you any amount of money that I'll hit it further. Just because of the shaft. The shaft is so important, and it's so often overlooked. And you know, that goes the same with irons. So with the irons, it's more lie angle. You know, so a perfect example,
right,
if the club is too upright, meaning when you set the club on the ground and you, not necessarily at address, but when you strike the golf ball, because your hands are more than likely going to be in a different position as they were at address, the more upright club will have the heel digging. What happens is the ground will dock the heel and turn the toe over. So you could be hitting a hook or a pull, and if you have clubs that are too upright and need to be flattened, it's not your fault. You know, there's
right.
nothing that you're doing wrong. It's just you have the wrong lie on your club. And, you know, an easy way to check that really on, at your golf course is if you hit balls in the range on the grass, check your divots. They should essentially look like a dollar bill. If they don't, if they're curved to one side or the other, find a fitter in your area or a PGA professional and get them checked. Usually a lot of pros, like me, if my students call me and say, hey, can you check my clubs? If they just need their irons checked, I'm not going to charge them to just check their irons. That, you know, it takes 5 minutes, not even, to look at their irons. We could go to the beginning
right.
of the lesson or the end of the lesson and just say, hey, look, let's throw a lie board down, throw some lie tape on it at the bottom, and take a look at how the club's impacting the ground. And if the club is forged, we can bend it. Obviously, as you know, but
right.
a lot of people don't know, if it's cast, it's made out of one specific piece of metal, it can only be bent to maybe a degree at the most. The only way you can bend those is if you heat them up and bend them
yeah.
that way. But even still, you're messing with the brittleness and changing the – you're essentially changing the composition of the iron. And a lot of people that do that, those are usually when you're at the range and you see – golf club heads flying further than the ball. That's
yeah.
usually what happens.
And, yeah, and I actually, I remember years ago somebody doing that up at one of us instant predictions up at the range. His five iron, the head of his firing into, you know, inch so. Yeah, make sure you're being. And that I've noticed, you know, over the years, if you're not fitted pro equipment and you're not having it checked by, you know, what I think and the happening as well as is they will take that that. Situation where, you know, maybe the snipped or what have you, and can properly fitted clubs, they'll start to make compensations in their swing thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly
that's
what
it is. A lot of times, I'm thinking these SWAT, you know, take it with a or USG. Yeah. F whatever, it's really important. Your equipment check, sure, you know, maybe even start the lessons because, you know, a lot of times you get out there and if it's not being checked properly, making these mistakes, way pro, they're going to do that anyways, but if it's not as experienced, they're going to start monitoring that individual swing and changes that maybe might be. So that's one thing is playing proper equipment. It's like Tylus playing with Tylus right on for the lessons. And I think they're all. The thing that we taught me off air and this many times just home, you know, I love it, and I like to see this technology, but something for a long is particularly in the driver. You and I was told that or the level to utilize that properly, a lot of the claims that the manufacturer, you know, the extra yard you're going to get and so on and so forth, it's just not going to be indicating and it a little bit, and I so promised to put anyone down. I really think that they just very unfair to that and getting the average thing. They're more often than because it's just that the reason they're list, you know, whether it be an instructor or a player, it's a max that's being present to put the club so I know how to make the proper swing. But average golf, for, you know, if he's spending $2-3 and can't correctly, you're not going to get your yardage. And they, and for the game, because they get frustrated and
can you hear me? I think you're a little scratchy there. My wife just messaged me. Says she's having a hard time hearing you as well. Can you hear me there, Ted?
Can you find?
Yeah, can you hear me? The connection's a little scratchy there. I don't know if it's you or me.
Yeah, it might be on both ends. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I think I can hear you a little better now. I want to make sure everybody can hear you.
It might have been just a bad connection. But you know, it's just like we talked about before with the equipment. I think it's important that people have to understand not to put too high of an expectation on equipment, and that's why it's so important to get out there and get those lessons and seek the help of a PGA Pro or USGTF. And just get out there and take those lessons first before you go out and make that $300-$400 investment in a new driver.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the knowledge that you're getting. I mean, I always tell my students, if you're sick, you want to go prescribe your own medicine. Well, my wife would probably beg to differ for me, but if you want to go prescribe your own medicine without seeing a doctor, so why should you go try and fix your golf swing or go try and buy clubs without getting at least a consultation or talk to an expert in the game, like a PGA professional or any really golf professional that's in your area? They've been playing the game for a long time, and more than likely we've made the mistake that you're either about to make or could make, so we could steer you in the proper way.
Exactly. So tomorrow you're going to walk around a little bit and check out some of the other equipment and some of the other products that are available at the merchandising show. Is that the idea?
I am, yeah. Ironically, we're talking about fitting. I have my fitting tomorrow with Titleist at 10:30 at the Ritz-Carlton Club. So I will be there for a little over an hour hitting some different driver shafts, checking my irons, and Titleist will be getting me my new set of irons. So, that kind of goes to show you. I mean, even if we're getting fit, And on the best
right.
players, the pros that play on the PGA Tours are getting fit. Everybody else should too. But after that spinning,
exactly.
I'll be going back to the show and staying there for a couple hours before driving to the airport and heading back to good old cold Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, Michael, just before we wrap up our segment here, I just want to give you another opportunity to, let the listeners know how they can get a hold of you, obviously for a couple of reasons, if they're interested in going to be up in your ear and they want to connect with you and maybe have you help them with their game, but also Alleys to Fairways. If anybody's interested in that, how can they get in touch with you, Michael?
You can either email me at mwheeler63@pga.com or you can check out my website. The website is www.michaelwheelerlearningcenter.com, and there should be a link on that to my Facebook page as well. So if you're on Facebook, same thing, Michael
okay.
Wheeler Learning Center. Just check that out. Give us a like. If you have any questions, I also write for golfwrx.com. So check out the last one was about proper camera position. So I just basically stuck with the basics for the first one, how to properly set up the camera. And I'm working on my second article now, which is basically the advanced side of things, what you'll see if you do it wrong, if you're on the target line, should it be, where should it be? Ideally on target line, you should be down at the ball. If you're on the body, you should be up essentially on your shaft plane. So you want to go up that invisible line there, which will be all explained in the next article. But you can contact me really at any of those places, all my other contact information is on the website. So if you're interested in lessons or anything like that, feel free to shoot me an email, give me a call, whatever works.
Okay. Well, listen, Michael, I want to thank you for coming on Golf Talk Live. I've enjoyed, listening to you and on your journey in the PGA profession. And I know that you've got a lot of great years ahead of you, and I appreciate you coming on the show. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I certainly want you to come back and participate in the Coach's Corner segment. So I'll, you know, after the show, we'll get in touch with one another again, and I'll give you the particulars of some of the dates that are available, and you can kind of pick and choose what works around your schedule. But certainly want you to participate in that. I think you have a lot of fun doing it, helping some of the golfers out there that are tuning in. We want to really help them with their game in the months to come. So I hope you'll participate in that as well. But, Michael, I want to thank you for coming on Golf Talk Live tonight. I enjoyed it, and I wish you much continued success, and I'm sure I'll run into you at some point tomorrow before I leave. I'm not going to stay too long. I'm going to get up early and head over back over to the show for maybe a couple of hours or so. So hopefully I'll run into you again. But if not, you have a safe trip back up to Cole, Pennsylvania, and much continued success and luck with your venture, and keep me posted also on Alleys to Fairways, and I'll be more than happy to do what I can to help you out with that as well.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you allowing me to come on the show and talk about it and talk about this game. So I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Michael, you have a safe trip back. Thank you very much for coming on tonight. And I know that the listeners enjoy, as much as I do, hearing about this great game. And any time that we can help them improve and help them understand the game a little bit better, then that just makes our job that much easier next time around. So you're welcome back anytime, Michael. And as I said, I'll get in touch with you after the PGA show, and we'll talk about the Coach's Corner bit as well. I'll have you back on for that.
Absolutely. I'll look forward to it.
All right. Have a great evening, Michael, and hopefully we'll bump into you again tomorrow.
Absolutely. Sounds good, Ted. Talk to you soon.
Okay. We're just going to wrap up here with a few more minutes, and then I'm going to end the broadcast. My special guest this evening, of course, was Michael Wheeler. He's a PGA apprentice, soon to be a full-fledged PGA teacher professional here in just a few short weeks. He'll have all of his ducks in a row, as they say, and very refreshing young man. It's nice to see that he understands not only about the game itself, but understands that it's okay to start at the bottom and work your way up. And I think that's refreshing in this day and age where so many are out there thinking that they can start at the top of things, and it's just not always the case. So it's nice and refreshing to see a young man that enjoys the sport as much as I do, and probably maybe in some ways might even enjoy it more. But it's glad to see that he's understanding that the more knowledge that we can surround ourselves with, the better stewards of the game that we're going to be. So I certainly want to, again, extend my well wishes to Michael Wheeler from Reading, Pennsylvania, and good luck shoveling when you get home. But anyways, for those of you that are tuning in here, we're just wrapping up the last few minutes of Golf Talk Live, and I want to thank you for tuning in each and every week. It's certainly an honor to be able to have you tuning in each week. I enjoy this tremendously, and I want to thank all of my listeners worldwide for faithfully tuning into Golf Talk Live each week. I certainly have enjoy a lot of pleasure and enjoyment of having a number of highly talented coaches and teacher professionals. We've had authors and of course, golf entrepreneurs stop by Golf Talk Live, and through their participation and guest appearances have helped to make Golf Talk Live a first-class show. And it's gaining a lot of momentum all around the globe. I get emails. In fact, just before I came down to the PGA show yesterday, I had actually a couple of phone calls the night before of different professionals wanting to come on the program and that. So word is traveling fast, thanks to all of you out there. So I want to thank you for tuning in and all of your support. And I'm going to give a special thank you to a few particular individuals again. But I want to remind everybody what's new and upcoming, as I always try to do every show, give you an idea of what's coming up. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, beginning March 6th is going to be our new segment. It's going to be coming on the same evening every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's called Coach's Corner, and it's going to start the show each week every Thursday for the first hour of the program. And then the second hour, I'm going to have, of course, another guest. But the first hour is going to be dedicated to the Coach's Corner segment that you heard me talking a few minutes ago with Michael. And basically, you'll have an opportunity to call in or email into your questions into the program and be able to pick the brains of some of the best coaches and teaching pros in the business. And each week I'm going to have a different panel, so there'll be a different group of PGA and other teaching professionals and coaches on the panel. There'll probably be a maximum of about three, just to keep it a little bit easier to handle. but it allow you an opportunity to contact the program, and you can do so by either calling in to area code 646-716-4667, or you can email your questions ahead of time if you want to questions.golftalklive@gmail.com beforehand, and I will certainly read them out on the air. Make sure that you include your name and where you're from, and maybe a way that we can get in touch with you, and I'll gladly read that out in the air. Of course, I won't give out your private information, but read out who you are and where you're contacting us from, just to give an idea of where some of the listeners are coming from. And we're probably going to be working with some new sponsors and some new advertisers who are eager to jump on board with this project and are going to maybe offer up some great gifts. So we're going to be passing that out as well as the weeks and months come along. So make sure you stay tuned for that. It's going to be beginning March 6th, Coach's Corner, beginning the show every Thursday night at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time here on blogtalkradio.com. So make sure you do that. Also coming up in 2014, as I've mentioned before, a little something for the ladies, beginning in April. The date has not been finalized yet, but hopefully will be in the next couple of weeks, so I'll be able to let you know the next show, hopefully. But I'll be joined by none other than LPGA professional Cindy Miller. And she's going to be, Cindy and I are going to be hosting a brand-new Golf Talk Live program called Women of Golf. It's going to have its own day and its own time. And as I said, details will follow shortly. But the general concept of this program is the Women of Golf program is going to really basically tackle many of the important topics that are facing women in the golf industry, from equipment to coaching to health and to accessibility, or rather lack of accessibility still in the golf business. And we're going to be talking with everybody from some of the best players on the LPGA Tour, as well as some of the best teachers in the LPGA. And also some of the corporate types in golf from around the world, and really so much more. So stay tuned for more updates on Women of Golf. I'll keep you posted each week as I get more information. But make sure you tune in for that, and once we get the date set, especially you ladies out there, start passing the word around that we're going to have a program just for you here at Golf Talk Live. So I want you to make sure that you stay tuned for that. And I want to give also a special thanks to some of the people that have really supported this program. Jonathan Laird, as I've mentioned many times here, he is the publisher and owner of South Coast Golf Guide, a great publication down here in the southeastern part of the United States, featuring a lot of great courses and resorts that you can play in the southeastern part, everywhere from, I think, right over from Mississippi right through to Florida, many of the states, including Alabama and Louisiana and so forth, and of course, Florida. A lot of great resorts and courses that are listed in the publication. So if you're looking for some great places to make sure that you pick up a copy while you're down here. And if you're not down here and you want to go online, you can go to southcoastgolfguide.com and you can get a copy. You can download it. I think it's in PDF form as well, so you can download a copy of that if you're not able to get a hard copy. Or you can actually contact Jonathan at southcoastgolfguide.com. You can email him and ask to have a copy sent out to you, and he can actually send them up into Canada too as well. So make sure that you get in touch with Jonathan that way. Or if you're interested in advertising in his publication, it's been around for about 20 years here in the southeast. It's a fantastic golf guide. So for those of you that might be interested in advertising to a very, very exclusive network of golf professionals and golfers alike from all over the place, it's a great guide to get involved with. So make sure that you get in touch with Jonathan at South Coast Golf Guide. Also, another young lady that has supported this program, and she was actually a guest here some time back, but Meredith Kirk, who was recently crowned just late last year, the 2014 Mrs. South Carolina America. She is wearing that crown very proudly, and I'm certainly proud for her. She is, of course, a teaching professional in LPGA and a USGDF certified teacher professional, and operates Meredith Kirk Golf out in the Myrtle Beach area. And she also has her own publication, Endless Golf, a Myrtle Beach magazine, fantastic magazine. I was actually in the magazine a few months ago promoting this program. And it's a great magazine, so make sure that you visit endlessgolf.com, and you can download a copy, or you can find out how you get your hands on a printed copy. And also a couple that I've gotten to know here on through some of the social media, Nikki and Tiffany Litherland from down in Australia. Thank you for helping spread the word about Golf Talk Live. I appreciate all your support. They've always been a big supporter of this program since I started it early last year, and have helped get this to become really a global brand. So thank you to Nikki and Tiffany Litherland. Look forward to actually having Nikki on the show. He's, of course, a professional and in the golf business, so I'm going to have him on here hopefully at some point a little bit later in the year when his schedule permits. But thank you guys for your continued support of the program. And, of course, a gentleman that I had the pleasure of seeing down at the PGA Show today, and he was also a guest, is Mr. Bernie Pinder, the founder and president of Ontic Golf, a great line of custom-made putters. We're going to be doing some great things with Bernie here in this year. Going to be getting more involved with his company, and he's down at the PGA Show at booth number 1592. So if you're a teaching professional or you're in the golf industry and you're listening to the program tonight, make sure you go over and say hello to Mr. Bernie Pinder for me. Let him know that I sent you over there and check out his great line of custom putters. Some great great equipment. And I didn't get a chance to see another gentleman, but I want to thank him as well. He was actually over there and down here as well. And I'll have to find out tomorrow if he's gone back over to Ireland. But Mr. Peter Doyle, who is a big supporter of the program as well, and he runs a business back over in Ireland called Doyle Golf Solutions. He's a teaching professional as well as a master club fitter. Peter, thank you again always for your continued support and help spreading the word for Golf Talk Live and tuning in each and every week and helping those golfers out there get access to some great information and training. So thank you, Peter, for tuning in and for help promoting Golf Talk Live. And I also want to thank two more people. Another one I spoke to today while I was at the PGA Show, and that was Mr. Barry Goldstein. Barry was on here, as you recall, last year in August, just before his daughter, Carly Rae Goldstein, headed off to LSU. And she's now playing for the LSU Tigers in their golf team and doing quite well. And we're going to have the two of them back a little bit later, probably in the spring sometime. Barry said he was going to try and coordinate that with Carly, depending on her schedule. And so I'm actually going to try and make it out and watch one of her tournaments while she plays for LSU. But thank you, Barry, and I was glad to connect with him today and see him down at the PGA Show as well. So thank you to Barry Goldstein and his lovely daughter, Carly Rae, excuse me. Thank you for your continued support, and I look forward to having you guys back on the program. Again, thanks again to my special guest tonight, Michael Wheeler, the PGA Apprentice, for coming on the show and for sharing some insight, not only with what he's doing in the game, but also his new venture, Alleys to Fairways. I think it's certainly a worthwhile cause, and I think we all need to do whatever we can in this profession to help those that are less fortunate than us and introduce them to this great game. So I want to thank you all for tuning in, and I want to thank you for all of your support. And thanks for stopping by Golf Talk Live. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I will see you back here next Thursday here on Golf Talk Live. God bless, and have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you.